Hi, Gabriel. Welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. And today you are working at AWS, right?
True.
For which organization?
We are labeling ourselves Bolt, Builder Onboarding and Lifecycle Tooling, which is part of a larger org called AWS Platform Experience.
Bolt, really? This is your name, Bolt, intended name?
Yes.
Hey, cool.
I am part of an org called Bolt.
What's your role there?
My role is Software Development Manager.
Ah, so you are managing developers.
Correct.
Ah, okay. So you are no more developer. So you're no manager. So you are one of the... You are actually at the dark side, right? No.
Yeah, some people call it in various ways. Since 2011, I made a switch. I stopped being an IC, and I had an opportunity. I started inside Betfair.com to be an engineering manager, and I grew there in that org on this side. And then I kept doing these various flavors of engineering management, various companies. I had various roles, whether it was head of engineering or director of engineering, when you are accountable and supporting multiple software managers or engineering managers. And this is what I've been focusing on in terms of adding value in organizations I was part of. Enabling teams or supporting teams or creating teams or growing and solving problems for customers or helping the business grow or achieve their goals, whatever they were.
And you miss the old developer days or you enjoy being manager? Would you like, if you had a wish, let's say the 1st January of 2026, and you could be, you could get your role as engineer back with lots of fun. And of course, your entire Java experience would be back. So you are master of Java 25 now. Would you like to switch?
No.
Would like to remain being manager?
I would like to remain.
You are actually the first manager who would like to go back to development, which is actually a good sign. Really. I ask the question a lot. And usually people saying, back then as a developer, this was a great time. No.
I would like to continue in this side. I observe I get a lot of energy when, let's say, an engineer I support gets promoted or when a team I support launches something that they are proud of, or when we get customer feedback acknowledging the good work that one of the teams I support has delivered. In AWS, customer feedback doesn't always mean external customers. A lot of things are built to enable, or many times many organizations build things that are being leveraged by other teams inside of AWS. So helping engineers grow is one of the major reasons why I still do these things, and I feel I can generate impact, higher levels of impact by playing these kind of roles.
That's true. But you have to be a bit careful, right? Because if you promote everyone, you will be alone, So yeah. There will be no one who actually codes. Just kidding.
Helping, promoting, I mean, in the IC track. Helping engineers develop in the software development career track.
That's perfect.
That's the majority of my efforts.
What tools or AWS services are in your organizations? In your organization?
In my organization, we own what externally was labeled as CodeSuite services, starting from code commit, because once you write some code, you need to keep it somewhere. So I label these foundational building blocks for builders. You need an easy way to have your code.
Regarding Builder, so I attended I spoke on some real cloud conferences, and usually I introduce myself as developer or architect. And then I recognize, oh, I'm at a cloud conference, so now I'm a builder, you know? So I'm
not a cloud builder.
Or solution architect. On solution architect is also interesting because I became aware of the solution architect term after Corona time. Before that, it was rare to spot the solution architect. And I was called architect, and now I still call myself architect, and everyone else is solution architect, so maybe I should rename my title. Or would be great to have one problem architect, you know? So you have everyone has solutions or yeah. You are enabling developers or builders, and the first building block was code commit, yes. Which I actually used a lot because what I liked about that is you can very easily create in seconds a repository for a project and automate the entire experience. And I used that for microservices back then. So I created code commit and hook up with code build, and I was basically done. And interestingly, it was almost deprecated, and now it's back, right? The code commit.
Well, I am an employee of AWS, and everything we talk about is, or what you will hear is my opinion, but sometimes I will refer to you or I will redirect you to the official AWS
But this is communication. Official. I just would like to talk about the official stuff.
July 2024. Yeah. The service was announced to enter maintenance mode.
Exactly.
And we extended the communication by clarifying that we commit to keeping and delivering our promises to customers regarding performance, availability, security, bars to be kept at the level that AWS built so far, and the bar that we are striving to keep with all of the services that are available for customers. And maintenance mode doesn't mean that it will disappear.
Okay. I like or still like code commit because, as I said, what you can easily do is you can create a repository for your own service. And you don't need to know all the GitHub or GitLab features. It's just, you know, committing and automating the entire experience. So I really like it a lot. I heard some criticisms outside, but it was like, you know, saying, okay, it's not as good as GitHub, which was never intended to be. So for me, it was like, okay, I don't understand it, but it's still useful. And it was really fast. So it was what I liked. You could, with CDK, create a repository extremely fast, and you were way to go. You know, this was like, you can, if I have a new microservice, I could go and create a repository, code build, and everything was in one stack. And if I use GitHub, it's just harder because GitHub is not AWS, so I have to create a repository first, install, you know, the AWS app, and then connect this with the code build. So there's some, it takes longer, and sometimes I don't need, you know, the entire GitHub cooperation. I just need the automation. So this is my feedback. So I really like the Git commit. This is why I ask whether I thought it was would be like re-enabled. Okay. What is the next one? I'm just curious. We can walk through, you know, the interesting services for developers because the audience are Java developers and I use a lot, actually. And per accident, you are the manager of this, which really interests me about AWS. So so this is like,
I get you. We continue. Next the next one in the, let's call it in the default or standard scenario would be code build. Once you have a piece of code or a module or some functionality that you've created, ideally you want to build it, right?
I like code build a lot as well. Why? It is serverless. So what serverless means, it runs if it has to run, and otherwise it just nothing happens. And it is, I'm a Java developer, so what I do is I can automate everything on my machine with Maven build and so forth. And then it is really easy to transfer all my local script to code build, basically copy and paste to the build spec YAML, and I'm ready to go. And what also cool about code build is that you can run it via an event bridge event, and if it's done, then it emits another event. So you can react, you know, to the code build and say, in case successful, not successful, whatever. So you can automate the entire process very easily. And there's a nice hack. What I'm doing is you can use code build or misuse code build to run jars, just jars. So you can say, you know, hey, start code build, and you can pick your machine. This is like a EC2 machine on demand. Then you can run your jar. What I do, copy from S3 the jar, run the jar, and afterwards it's done. So this was also actually a great experience with code build. So code build is, it's easy to use. And I would like, the only thing which I don't like about code build is that the Coreto versions are not immediately available. So now I'm a customer or a proxy of many of AWS customers. I'm a consultant. How to give now a feedback to the team that I get tomorrow Coreto 25 or next week if it, you know, it's this weekend and so forth. So what is the proper way to give feedback? Now the question.
You are, let's put it this way, you are in a sort of a privileged state because you are also having this badge of being called an AWS hero, mm-hmm. and you have you are part of a community that has signed some NDAs, and you are mm-hmm. either invited or asked to share some feedback on things mm-hmm. that are not yet generally available. Mm-hmm. My first answer would be leverage your connections mm-hmm. and seek their input on what is a formal way to submit an ask. Mm-hmm. That would be one way to do it. Now, of course, there's various social media platforms that could also be leveraged for you to try and get more traction on
what I did in the past, asking for Java features. I just filed issues on GitHub, you know, because this is the images are open source and it works somehow. But I thought, you know, maybe it helps internal people that there is an official channel that I can file the issue and explain why. Because if I do it, you know, from developer to developer, I say, yeah, sure, but no one knows about that right now. So I just, in general, if the more general questions, if listeners would like to see some improvement, you know, what to do in the AWS case. Of course, if you have a client, you can always call directly to your AWS, TAM, right?
Customer support or technical account manager.
Yeah. This is what I thought, you know, there's like maybe sometimes. So I use GitHub in the past for code build. And I thought that you are also the master of code build, but unfortunately not, you know. So this is, I have
no. But I can I can forward your ask. And of course, there's quite a lot of public information on how AWS mm-hmm. runs mm-hmm. and the process inside Amazon in terms of planning. And the Pragmatic Engineer blog, I think it was summer 2022, if I'm not mistaken, August 2022, when Gergely Yoros, the writer of this very famous, very visited newsletter for engineers, published two editions of a very thorough, detailed analysis of the Amazon and AWS internal routines or process, and in there one can read about the planning process that Amazon and AWS are following. Mm-hmm. And it's hard, I must admit, it's hard to prioritize because the capacity and availability of each team is always less than what we would like it to be, or we have so many things we would like to build, and then the hard processes around prioritizations and mm-hmm. Picking the right order is, I can call it, or finding the best trade-offs are among the toughest challenges for teams in AWS.
Yeah, this is also my impression. You are very cautious with your time.
Yes.
So you're a very, very efficient organization. This is what I can tell you. It is like amazing how efficient you have to be with your time. What I, for me, let's say you don't know how AWS operates internally and you are from the outside. So there are things which I don't like or I would imagine differently how cloud operates. For instance, this is the Coreto thing, right? So And I'm a Java developer. I can only give you Java examples. Maybe Python and Rust or whatever developers are similar experiences. But from my perspective, what my expectation would be, Coreto 25, which is LTS. So, you know, there's Java, there were Java 11, 17, 21, and 25. What I would expect that if 25 is out, so this is no surprise because the Java 25 was, I don't know, in the making between 21 and 25, maybe there were 2 years or something like this. And what I would expect that if Coreto 25, this is the OpenJDK AWS edition, if the Coreto 25 is released, I would expect that immediately or a few days later, all services which use Coreto 25 are also upgraded. You know what I mean? So they say, okay, this is something like internal synchronization of all services, that the 25 code build is there, Lambda runs on 25, and whatever, whoever uses is depending on Java 25 already uses that. And there is one saying on AWS, undifferentiated heavy lifting, right? And that you should focus on business logic and not in the infrastructure. And you don't have to answer. It's just my criticisms. And sometimes I say, come on, you know, we have Java 25. I need a code build. I still need, I mean, this is not a big thing, one-liner to install Java 25. But it takes, you know, 10 seconds to install or maybe 15 seconds. And it installs it every time, which is huge waste of resources, network bandwidth, and CPU cycles. And so this is what I don't like, but it has to be that way because, you know, on AWS, how it operates is a microservice organization. And this is really hard to coordinate. And I absolutely understand this like metrics. You know, you get requirements from your clients, requirements from everywhere. But from developer perspective, I would say like a synchronous release, what Apple did, you know, with the operating system. In one day, you know, all services supporting the recent whatever you have, Python or whatever languages you're also supporting, Java, if Coreto is there. And I would say maybe it's hard every minor version, but at least the LTS versions. And it's getting way better than in the past. But this is what I never got. So like from outside, you know, you would like to have a lot of developers. But if you look at this, okay, this is not always coordinated, but this is the price of being a microservice architecture or organization. So this was like my open public thinking about that. And because you are working for AWS, don't say anything. But it's just, you know, yeah.
I accept your suggestion. You are correct that this would be an ideal scenario. And as you called out, you've seen progress. And I can confirm that there are investments being done to continue on this momentum that you've observed. Sometimes we meet. Sometimes we are almost there to meet customer expectations. Someone will not be so happy. It's not easy. I'm going back to the yes, there could be things that could get done faster, as in any cloud provider organization.
But it's not like, you know, there is an, it is not even, you know, Java 25 came out, right? And this Visual Studio Code plugin, official plugin, didn't support it from day one. It's nothing to do with AWS. We also thought, okay, if this is LTS, you knew it, you know, in advance that it will come. Yeah. At least the LTS should be synced. It came 1 or 2 weeks later or whatever. It was very fast, but still interesting that it doesn't happen, you know, immediately because everyone waited for Java 25. It was a very special release. And it was an unfair criticism because in my enterprise project, there are larger companies, you know, the teams not even, sometimes they don't even cooperate, you know, they don't like each other. So I would say in your case, it is actually looking better and better. It's not ideal, but it's something happens, which is a good thing. Okay, we discussed code build. Maybe the next one.
Let's pause a bit to recap the idea around how to submit feature requests. I think that's worth to call out. In general, every service has a documentation a page. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And somewhere in each of the services section, you might, or there's high chances of finding a page called reporting an incident or creating a request. Of course, there's tutorials and various structures of the documentation. But to the listeners of your podcast, I felt it's worth to pause a bit and summarize. AWS Docs is one place where if you don't find, you can provide feedback with regards to the documentation page, whether it contains or not service request guidance and indications on the steps. Then there are articles, for example, repost.aws contains a very detailed 4-minute read page. It was created 2 years ago. How to create feature requests for AWS, a step-by-step guide.
Oh, very good.
Then there's GitHub for services that have GitHub public repos, and quite a lot of the organizations have.
CodeBuild is there. So
what yeah, that's one example. Yeah. In GitHub, submitting there. And of course, you can rest assured that service teams do track and do check upvotes of various features, and those are parts of the procedures, or let's call them checklists, when features get prioritized, that is being taken into consideration. So those are a few. Now, of course, there's, if you check on Twitter, there's the hashtag AWS Wish or AWS Wishlist. There is a specific marketing or under the marketing organization, various dedicated teams that might collect, or various internal AWS-wide campaigns might exist at some point in time to dive deeper into some of the AWS wishlist hashtags. I think from this perspective, we are trying our best, and we will continue to strive to deliver value to customers and help them in their journey of using AWS with the best possible experience that we could offer them.
Yeah, perfect. Yeah, this is what we really try, because yeah, I had a chat already with some service teams, and this is my impression. They really try hard to do that, and there are lots of requirements. That's the problem, you know, how to prioritize the requirements. But for the dev tools or the everything dev related or the or ball or bold related, this is the, was the name of your acronym. For that, I would say if I start a new project right now, I would like to have the freshest possible environment, you know, in order to, you know, save money and not have to migrate migrate your application from Java 25 to whatever, or from Python whatever to Python whatever. I have no idea about Python. I just don't, you know, in general. So I only can tell you what happens in Java. Okay. The next service is related to CodeBuild. So this, my suggestion is CodePipeline. And what CodePipeline does, it summarizes multiple CodeBuild stages. And CodePipeline is really nice if you for instance you need an user approval, so CodePipeline can wait until the user says yes, and we use it for release management for multiple things, and also great service. It's also is a part of your sister team, I guess.
It's in my organization. A peer of mine is the software development manager for CodePipeline. But it's interesting how you picked CodePipeline, because my mental model is, once you have code in a repo, once you build that, the output of that build needs to sit somewhere. So if you wouldn't have introduced CodePipeline, I would have suggested the next one from my mental model is CodeArtifact, because CodeArtifact helps builders to have a safe virtual storage where artifacts of their Code are a big store, whether it's a jar file or a Debian or an npm or various programming languages do have their own way to generate output, right? So
the code artifact is actually great service. It is similar to Nexus, right?
Yeah.
And also, you can create it. So I use CDK all the time. I don't know whether it's in your organization. This is the Cloud Development Kit. And what I don't like, you know, to click in the console because it's not repeatable. And if the AWS console changes this layout, which sometimes happens, that's Cognito. Recently, I look at Cognito now. It looks great, but different than before. I couldn't find, you know, what I wanted to find. But my Java API is always the same. So I automate whatever I can from day one.
I hear you, but that's very specific. Let's pause a bit to call out. A person who learns for the first time or a person who is doing the AWS 101 crash course, they might not be. So we need to cater for their needs as well. So the UI sometimes in the beginning is also very important. So I just wanted to call that out.
Yeah, sure.
It's great that you CDK. It's great that you are trying whenever you need to set these things up and to use the CLI. Yes, great. Continue doing that. It's great.
In my project, it wouldn't be possible without.
I mean,
what you can do, right? So if you don't do this, what will happen? Developers will do something on their local machines and say, you know, it works on my machine. So we have to automate from day one. And back to code build and code pipeline, it's even crazier. So we have CDK where we set up code build and code pipeline, and they are running CDK. You know what I mean? So we have our Java projects comprises business logic and infrastructure as code. And on every change, everything gets deployed. And this provisioning happens by code build. So what usually happens in my project, the first step is to create code build with code pipeline. And then we hook up this with back then Git commit or GitHub. And on every change in the private repository, the code build runs and provisions the services. And code artifact is great because you can set up it with CDK and you can set up. And if you do it with CDK, it is easier with these permissions, you know? So you can say only code build can push to code artifact, and if you use the console, it also happens behind the scenes, but there are roles generated where you have no idea what they are doing and how they are called. So I'm with you. UI is extremely important, and even sometimes there's new service. I take a look at the console, and I try to learn, okay, which fields and attributes are there, and then I have a general impression what it does, and then I know what the method names are and attributes on CDK in Java. So this is what happens in my case. But you said code artifact. We use code artifact sometimes, but for releases, we use actually S3. This might surprise you, because if you lots of my projects are serverless, Lambda, and what happens is this function.zip is pushed to S3, and S3 says versions. So we get this versioning for free, and S3 reacts to changes, and from the legal perspective is also okay. I mean, S3 is highly regulated. So we misuse S3 for sharing deliverables. And the cool story is, Gabriel, if something is stored in S3, S3 emits an event, event lands in event bridge, and event bridge can decide whether the next code build or code pipeline is running. So we can move from stage to stage fully, so in an automated way. This is what happens in lots of my projects. And I don't know whether you're also in charge of ECR, Elastic Container Registry. This is what we use in the case of ECS, for instance. Okay. So, but you're right. Code artifact is widely underused. It is you get in a second something like Maven Nexus, and you can push your artifacts there.
Yes.
And if you have a Maven project, it's crazy. If you have serverless projects, S3 and code build are also perfect, because you can directly from code build push to S3. It is very easy. It's one-liner. Mm-hmm.
So that's the beauty, see, of like what you just called out, your use case. You figured out on your own, or while experimenting, you found out what works best for you. Someone else, let's say a little startup, 0 to 1, or big enterprises with thousands of engineers, they have various different needs. So this is how, like, what I'm trying to share is the challenges of us having to keep an eye and try to do the best or help each of our customers or personas, types of customers. It's great you found your way. Others, we need to support them more or abstract a few things for them to make their life easier or to make their learning curve easier. Others do not want any abstractizations. They just want the core low-level building blocks so that they can play and organize and put together, like building Lego building blocks, how they want things to operate, and orchestration in their world might be different than how you see it. With Code Artifact, the reason I brought it up is because we consider that for those who want to simplify and have everything or as many things in one safe place, then Code Artifact might be a useful thing. You don't have to switch or you don't have to exit the AWS network, for example, for fetching. If you keep the artifacts of your builds inside the AWS ecosystem, then you might get some benefits that are not visible initially. But that's the value I see with Code Artifact.
Code Artifact's a huge value for different use cases in my project. Yeah. If you're interested, one of them is you attended, of course, you organized the origin Palinka Java user group in Cluj, right? And I guess what I already mentioned back then is that we use end-to-end tests. This was to test the front end. And in Java, I have a different module and standalone module. And the system test module runs within code build as a distinct stage and tests the deployed artifact. So we also use code build for testing. So because you can easily do this, it's just Maven, it just works. Now, the interesting part is how I organize the system test is, maybe you didn't forgot completely Java. So we have, you know, Java interfaces. This is a Java micro profile. And the interesting part is these interfaces are reusable. So it means during my system tests, I use the interfaces to test my application, but I can reuse the same interfaces in different tests, and as well, I can reuse them for performance testing. So what I do is, after successful system tests, I push these interfaces, I create a jar, push the jar to Code Artifact. And now my subsequent stages can check out from Code Artifact the jars, which works perfectly. So this is one of the for Code Artifact. Another one, you can use Code Artifact to have a defined way to cache jars, right? Because Code Artifact sits in your account, and you can use Code Artifact to read from it, right? All your jars. You don't have to download it over and over again. You can use Code Artifact for that.
Correct.
Yeah. And so I would say Code Artifact is a great thing. The hack with the function zip only works for serverless Lambda applications, which are deployed with CDK. And if you have, you know, your Docker-based or container-based application, then you have to use Code Artifact, because what happens then is you push your results to Code Artifact and use Docker build and create, you know, your image and push the image to ECR, and then you can deploy run on App Runner or whatever. So I was in very specific serverless case, but nonetheless, what changed maybe in my project, clients ask me about solutions and not necessarily about specific architectures or whatever. And but my requirement is that the entire build system has to run in dedicated account with least privileges, and it basically the code pipeline and code build, they are communicating with other accounts. And why we're doing this is for security. It means I would say regardless how big or small your team is on AWS, what you can have is you have the unique opportunity to have isolated accounts like a microservice architecture, and we have a build account. It only builds with code build, code pipeline, and so forth. And the other accounts are for other purposes, right? It's safer, And if you have such an architecture, automation is king, because if you will try, you know, to have multi-account without CDK, it is going to be harder. It will really going to be harder. So this is like, you know, why I did what I do. And Code Artifact is underrated. Its simplicity is unique. It is really, I think, in CDK is like 10 lines of code and you have it, right? So this is it is really nice. And this, you can also integrate it nicely with Maven. So and you can say, okay, pick, you know, this secret, and in your Maven will pick artifacts from the Code Artifact.
Yes.
Next one.
Or so before we get to Code Pipelines, my mental model is Code Pipelines is the orchestrator of various things, and mm-hmm. I'm leaving it for as the last.
What you know? What I also do for orchestrating code build, you won't believe, works perfectly.
Tell me.
Step functions.
Okay, makes sense. Yeah,
step functions. You can have a sequence of code builds, and also the user approval works also good with step functions. And the cool story of step functions is if you run code build, step functions can wait until it completes. So there's also but this is unique. But code pipeline is the what you should start with. Not, you know, this is like, okay.
Code. So let's assume you are in this point. You had your repository created. You have it somewhere. You've built whatever app you have, and the artifact sits somewhere. Mm-hmm. Once that artifact sits, you need to deploy it, right? Somewhere. Mm-hmm. So then code deploy. Code deploy is another service under this code suite collection of building blocks for builders. Code deploy is also used by various internal to AWS and Amazon, not only AWS internal services, various organizations outside AWS also use Code Deploy. Code Deploy is a service which, imagine this, a new region gets launched and AWS announces availability of a new region. Mm-hmm. Various customers might want to use or leverage that region to be closer to their customers. So then Code Deploy is a service that needs to be in those regions when that region launches or very soon after that region launches so that other services can be there. Code Deploy is that part of like in the journey of what happens after you have some code. That's a building block. Now, various customers use Code Deploy in various ways. It's also quite flexible, and I think along
that's
the years.
What you say.
Yeah, please.
Because what I use Code Deploy for is on ECS rolling up updates. So this is what I use, and what the region think is actually a very good idea. So what I understood is the Code Deploy knows the regions, and it gets updated if new regions are available, right?
Not let me rephrase or let me try to clarify more. Because various other internal services use Code Deploy, they need Code Deploy to be in that region so that they can be available in that region. So that brings automatically a toll on Code Deploy to be up to date and to always make itself available and offer its capabilities whenever there's a new region that is being prepared for customers. Mm-hmm. That comes with extra challenges, pains, trade-offs.
Of course.
Building a region is a big thing for AWS. Mm-hmm. And
yeah, sure.
We are striving to get better and be faster with expansions, and if you were to see a graph of the way AWS progressed in terms of launching new regions, you would see the improvements on how more and more got launched. And
for me, it's unbelievable actually, because a region for me is almost an entire cloud by itself, right? The region is this
exactly.
like a cell And if you will compare AWS region, other cloud providers will be the entire cloud, actually, is in a region. And the consistency that, you know, in the regions after a view, I don't know how long it takes, but at the end, you get most of the services available everywhere, which is remarkable. So the, you know, the amount of automation has to happen internally is amazing, actually, for me, if I think about this. And even more interesting for me are the outposts, you know, the outpost servers. So you can order your own region, and some of the services can run, you know, in your garage, if you like. And it's also remarkable that this is like Lego blocks. But I'm curious about code deploy. What is the, you know, the killer use case for code deploy, maybe, or your favorite use case? You know, just, you know, from what you know, what code deploy is used most for? If you just, you know, because I'm curious, because I use it a lot, but I don't know whether I use it correctly. You know, it worked. It was added value for me. But what your clients are using code deploy for?
There's no correct answer here. It's so flexible that and it offers so much flexibility. Whether it's just executables or Lambda functions. When the documentation was created, there was a challenge like how can we explain customers, and ultimately the words used were you can deploy a nearly unlimited variety of application content. Mm-hmm. I think this is the beauty of code deploy, that it's so flexible and it helps and it makes it easier for you to either release new features or update Lambda function versions or prevent downtime during application deployments. It offers these capabilities like having deployment groups or a lot of support in monitoring your deployments. The security bar is also very high in terms of the mm-hmm. features we offer. So I don't have another way to summarize mm-hmm. this. There's no preferred. When I was an IC and while I was coding and building my own or contributing to an organization as a developer, I was mostly focused on Java. So,
very good. This is a good approach.
Uh-huh. back then, as in, if I go back in time, 2010, 2011, before I switched mm-hmm. tracks, the projects I was working on were mostly large apps requiring JBoss. So if back then code deploy would have existed, I would have loved to simplify a bit more the procedures in terms of having a safe approach to deploying or blue-green deployment capabilities and these kind of things. But code deploy is offering also like EC2 auto-scaling or load balancing support for elastic load balancing types, or it's so vast and it grew so much in terms of features that it offers because over the years it kept growing and supporting and adding more.
For me, it's a little bit overlap, so I would have to yeah. I have to tell investigate code deploy a bit more because it overlaps a little bit with CDK. What I think it could be interesting for some of my projects is in code deploy to manage the provision concurrency of AWS Lambdas, for instance. So I have almost like an auto-scaling for Lambdas, and auto-scaling is now having more or less provision concurrency instances. I do it right now with CDK, but it could be also code deploy. So I think what I should do is just to, you know, to compare what's easier, or to small the, how to call it, not easier, maybe the more canonical way, code deploy or CDK. But I agree, a code deploy is particularly strong with containers, ECS, and so forth. And I'm just curious about the added value in serverless. This is what actually, I don't know whether I mentioned. I use Java, I would say 100% serverless right now in all projects. And this is where, because I'm thinking, you know, what is the absolute added value of the cloud? And the, you know, the most added value my clients can get is serverless. No infrastructure, focus on business logic. And this is exactly what's surprisingly, this reminds me of Java E, J2E, and all the ideas where you focus, you know, on Palinka, on Likert, and not on the server. So this is the same story. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And code deploys in your organizations or in
I'll give you one example. One thing I really like is yes, if you are a builder and you go to Lambda and you learn about Lambda and the documentation in Lambda offers some guidance on how to deploy or how to take care. And maybe the documentation doesn't link you to code deploy. Maybe some page doesn't mention, mm-hmm. doesn't introduce mm-hmm. you. Let's play with this mm-hmm. a little bit. What I wanted to share, because you've asked me, what do I like or what? Code deploy for Lambdas. I like this when I became aware and when I saw there's these three events that code deploy has for Lambda deployments. Before allow traffic, or after allow traffic, something like that.
Ah. Mm-hmm.
So you can play with shifting traffic between various Lambda versions of your various versions of your Lambdas. That's a particular thing I like. Those events.
This is already okay. This is what would help me, because what we do right now is we don't use Lambda versioning, so we use the latest. And the great thing is, if you have code built and you push, the old Lambda remains active, and then it is replaced by the new one. So there is no downtime. But to roll back, we have to move forward, you know. But with code deploy, you could switch and do experiments even, right? So I could have, for instance, during stress tests, one Lambda with snap start and one without, with two versions, and automate the experience. So I run my system tests with snap start and then without, and it is fully automated, for instance, which could be harder with my approach, because I will have to commit to the repository to switch between versions. You know what I mean? So I already have my first killer use case. So we can stop the recording, and I'm busy right now. But this was actually a great thing that it emits additional events, and you can automate more.
In the documentation, yeah, they are called lifecycle hooks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that might be something you will like.
Yeah, I like it already.
Okay,
so we had code deploy, which is I'm already on user guide, and what I'm reading right now, I shouldn't, but I do Lambda function deployments with code pipeline tutorial, and try not to. The cool story is they also store it in S3 bucket, which is very compatible with my approach, the Lambda. So just in the tutorial, I just kept one, which is good. So I will take a look at this. Okay, what's next tool?
There is code connections.
Code connections?
Yes.
This is what you connect with GitHub. This is what,
yes.
what you mean?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Code connections is, it has passed through a rebranding, might be the word that fits best. I think a few years ago, it was called CodeStar Connections.
Exactly. This is the first step in the code pipeline. Exactly. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Source.
Mm-hmm. Code Connections, how can we imagine? 1 second. I have an interruption.
Gabriel, this is already paid off. I have another killer use case with Code Connections.
Okay, tell me.
Yeah, there are actions. And one action is, I found it right now, is tag resource.
Yeah.
So it means if someone tags resource, we could automate the thing. And hopefully the resource would also mean source repository if it's linked to. Is it true? So it means I will have to read. But if this is true, what you could do is, because this was always, you know, the question, how we automate release. And my thinking was either we have a specific tag on GitHub or specific name of commit or whatever, because we usually work trunk only, no branches. So, but if someone will tag on GitHub and this tag resource become active, then we could have a distinct code pipeline code build just for release build, or we can configure the existing one differently. And so this was actually, because I use that, I have to tell the CodeStar connection was one of the two things which you couldn't automate. Because on the GitHub page, you had to create the repository first, which is not AWS, then install the app, and then you could create the CodeStar connections back then.
Yeah.
And the second thing which you can hardly automate on AWS is, of course, buying a domain, right? So there's also, you have to buy the domain, then you have, you know, the public zone, and then you can automate whatever you like. And but with that, I guess, I will have to experiment with it. It seems to be possible to react to tags and changes in the repository, which is actually one of my challenges in the past. So this is, if it, this works, I will have to investigate that. This was just a close look at the event types.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So the idea, I imagine, let's make two steps back. Code corrections is there to help builders who have a wish or a habit or a preference or a passion for third-party provider resources. Mm-hmm. So GitHub, like I'll focus on the Git protocol for now. Code corrections allows you to correct to a third-party provider, let's say Bitbucket, GitHub, GitLab, and use that connection as a source integration with other AWS resources, such, for example, Code Pipeline or Code Build. So you can use a connection ARN in your stack templates, because you've mentioned you use CDK. So if you use a connection ARN in your stack templates for code builds or code deploy apps or code build projects or code pipelines, you can do this without the need to reference the stored secrets. Mm-hmm. And large organizations, for example, can handle in code connections the basic setup and other, so some software engineers do not have to worry about those things. So there is definitely a large value.
I was involved in a project that used GitHub Actions and wanted to automate, but it was a few years ago, AWS. And what they did, you know, they stored secrets in GitHub Actions as a secret. And they were basically AWS user secrets, not even a role, because they were not allowed, you know, or they were not able to use the OIDC flow to get the short-lived credentials. And I told them, really, I don't like to be associated with the project in any way, because the long-lived, you know, the long-lived users, they are forever valid. You know, this is and this is was like a security problem. And you're right with the connection. You install the app and you are managing the issues on the GitHub site. So this is your job, and then GitHub is my understanding. If something changes on GitHub side, it emits a notification to code via the connections to code build or code pipeline. I think you need a code pipeline for that. I think you cannot directly start code build, right? So because only the code pipeline can have a connection, is my understanding. But the code pipeline has a source connection and one code build usually, and then you're running.
Yeah, so you can share connections with AWS accounts. Code connections supports even Azure DevOps. You can create a connection to Azure DevOps, Bitbucket, GitHub, GitLab. Whether if you like, some customers want self-managed GitLabs, that's fine. We support that. So after you create these things, then you can share connections with AWS accounts. And yeah, I think there's a great value in this. I imagine I always think of code connections as a suitcase that's safe and holds your secrets safe.
Oh yeah, that's interesting. My mental model for connections was like, you know, the connection to the repository because it was always painful, especially in my enterprise clients. They are specific networking or whatever. And, you know, to make the connection to an outside server is not always easy. And the source connection, code connection right now, was the standardized ways to do that.
Yeah, indeed. The suitcase is like the connection, but you don't have to know what's inside of it and how you connect to, whether it's GitLab or Azure DevOps. That is taken care of by the suitcase. I'm too childishly using this metaphor with the suitcase.
For me, it would be not suitcase, more telephone line.
Okay, cool. Yeah,
so this is why my childish thing. But
So code pipelines is the orchestrator. Like, of all the things we've talked about, code pipelines helps you to define and play around, depending on your maturity or level of depthness you want to go in configuring or controlling or generating various stages of from code to deployment in the end, or something that's in front of customer. I think code pipelines, that's the orchestrator that helps you. Now, of course, you can have a very basic pipeline. You can have a more sophisticated one. You can go very wide if you're in a very regulated environment and want some manual checks or some person.
This is what I always had to do. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The automated
news,
yeah,
Gabriel.
Please.
For me, breaking news, it is official AWS announcement. It is on the what's new code pipeline. And there is code pipeline V2. And in February 2024, 9th of February, there was an announcement. And this is actually what I found out right now. Back then, I wanted to implement that, but I did it differently. But what CodePipeline V2 supports are tag-based triggers. So now it not only reacts to commits, it can react, you know, to tags. And with that, it's great because it says, if I tag a commit, I can initiate a release flow. All other commits should end up, you know, in my integration stage or dev stage or dev environment. And with that, this is another cool feature for automation.
Yes, it helps you setting up or provisioning servers. It helps you to streamline the release process, configure it as you wish. It helps you to adapt. If you observe you want to add something else in the future, it's flexible. Notifications for various events, that was, I think, from day one or very early, it was offering various SNS notification capabilities.
Trigger filters is the official AWS feature we talk about.
Okay.
Trigger filters and hugely useful. I will also try it out soon. That's great. And do you have what's the difference between, what's the feature of V2? So the trigger filters are only available in V2, in code pipeline V2. There is a newer code pipeline V2. And by the way, the user interface was revamped. It looks nicer right now. So this is like, it looks modern and fresh. So this is what I like in the console. So this is what I use the console for, to monitor my builds. So this is, it looks nice. So this is mostly open on my machine.
Mm-hmm. I do not have... I don't have a specific answer to your V2. I didn't get to.
On your favorite, maybe, if you have one, or I have already one. This is the the filtering, custom filters. This is And there's also in the user guide a chapter, automate starting pipelines using triggers and filtering, and the filtering is an interesting one. And by the way, this is why I really appreciate code commit. Because in code commit, you know, the integration was out of the box very easy. So I could automate from day one because I could create the repository with the projects, which is impossible with GitHub. it's not a fault from AWS, but AWS cannot automate. It could, but automate creation, repository creation on repository creation on GitHub. Cool. So we managed to, the code pipeline is an orchestrator of code builds. And the interesting part is code pipeline and code builds are emitting events. This is, and the events, there are lots of events. And the events are available through Event Bridge. And with that, you can very easily automate the entire process. This is what I like the most as a developer. Because imagine, Gabriel, you are manager, so I have to remind you what's possible actually with events. So if you push to GitHub a tag right now, so through the connection, the AWS code connection, your pipeline gets notified on AWS. And with that, another event is emitted, which one we have to look it up, but there is an event like, you know, something happened. And then code build runs, and the code build emits events like, I think, initiated, in progress, successful, or unsuccessful, something like this. There's like a lifecycle management for code builds. So it means you can receive the events, or you can listen to the events, and then do something. You can notify developers, you can run on other builds, code builds, and so forth. And we talking about right now, actually, event-driven architectures. You know, there was the huge discussion in Java all the time. I hated the entire event-driven architectures in Java because everyone wanted to have it, but no one had the events. You know, in Java projects, developers started to send their own events, and two lines later, they received the events again, whereby on AWS, you get the events all the time, so you can listen to the events and automate the entire process. And the interesting part as well is it is stable, and because if the code pipeline doesn't run the entire time, it receives, or code build, it receives the event, then it wakes up and then goes to sleep, or go to sleep, it is destroyed. So you always have a fresh execution environment. So if it breaks, it only breaks for one build, for instance.
I hear you. You've asked me about earlier, I think I can go back to a question of yours regarding what do I like, or with regards to code pipelines, I feel that because the world evolved and various solutions got created, and various or some of those solutions became popular. I'm thinking out loud, whether it's GitHub or and GitHub Actions is now very, very popular. Sometimes I feel GitHub Actions are used in a wrong way, or sometimes I observe things, but ultimately, when you look at the ecosystem, Jenkins became popular along the years, right? GitHub as well, along with its GitHub Actions offering. So code pipelines, why I like it is that it's flexible and helps customers to choose. And what I'm calling out is we are not trying to lock down, or code pipeline is not locking customers if they want GitHub Actions, if they have a strong preference or expertise with Jenkins. And sometimes you might get very passionate, right? An engineer might be so passionate and attached to their own Jenkins functionalities and the value that they get out of Jenkins that they just don't want to let go. It's okay. We have tried to help or observe or cater to their needs, and the integrations that Code Pipeline offers. I think that's what stands out for me, the fact that customers can choose. Now, TeamCity, Jenkins, ECR build and publish. You can have an ECR used at the Docker image repository, use Docker push and pull commands. You upload Docker images to your repository, you add a ECR build and publish action to your pipeline, bam, you have an automation and you can get things done.
I hear you, but from If I start a project, so this happened several times recent years. So clients ask me, you know, if they want to go to the cloud, what should we do? So my thinking is exactly to Java thinking, consistent with my Java thinking, application server thinking back then, Java E, whatever. So what I did back then, my theory was, okay, if we do Java E right now or MicroProfile, let's pick JBoss or Glassfish. Glassfish was a big thing. And so I try to use Glassfish as much as possible. The standards were on Glassfish, if it's possible, and then extend it to other libraries or frameworks. Now, if I go to AWS and my clients have already AWS, I would try to use as much from AWS as possible, because if I would have external Jenkins, GitLab or whatever, or even to run on EC2 Jenkins, I have to invest more time thinking about security, patching and all the stuff. But if I use, you know, managed service on AWS, team like yours or other teams, they care and are patching the services. The very famous example was on Lambda. If the log4j problem happened, the engineers just patched, you know, the Amazon Coreto runtime for me, and problem disappeared. And I would like such a features. But the more, you know, the more without a reason. If there are reasons, of course, I will have to pick something different. But if there are no reasons, I try, you know, to stay in an ecosystem to get the most out of that. Or I stay, you know, on premise. So this is what I explain, because the architectures, from my perspective, has to be consequential. If they are not consequential, so if you're not consequent, I say, okay, we can do this or this or this, nothing would happen in projects. Everyone pick, you know, something which is cool, but, you know, to integrate the entire experience will take months. So for me, okay, we go this route, so let's do it. If we do Java, we do Java. If we do AWS, we do AWS, and on Azure, we just do Azure, right? So this is the same. On Azure, I will absolutely use GitHub Actions and Azure DevOps. On AWS, I try to use Code Pipeline and Code Build, or try. I use it all the time, for instance. Mm. This is my thinking, and it is easy to explain. And if something is easy to explain, project became also maintainable, because, you know, the decisions are clear. Cool. I think we covered everything, right?
Well, there's always more to talk, but for today, I think we can stop here.
Yeah. And if there is more interesting parts, if you have more favorites, you are always welcome back. So we have another chat about whatever your organization is doing, and be bold, right? This is the...
Well, yeah, let's recap on that. That's my Amsterdam-based organization acronym, Builder Onboarding and Lifecycle Tooling, which is part of a larger role called DevTools, which is part of an even larger organization called AWS Platform Experience, Plex. Oh. So that's the layering part. And I'm here expressing my own personal views and thoughts, and they are not bound or not to be interpreted as a official AWS communication of any kind.
Absolutely not. This was just, you know, a recap with you. And the interesting part is I didn't even knew that you work for AWS. So the entire history is I met you in Cluj, a Java user group meeting 14 years ago. And then I was invited back in DevTalks. And there was another guy, Olympio.
Yeah, I asked him to help Olympio Pop. Yes.
Olympio Pop. And I thought, okay, but you are not Olympio. And I tried to find, you know, the old references. And there was Gabriel. And he reminded me our conversation in the old hotel, whatever. Back then, it was a nice conversation with you. And I say, I have to invite you back, you know, to talk about the history. And he told me, you are working for AWS. And this is the entire history. So we have now. And the next thing is the Code Build and Code Pipeline. I use these tools all the time, CDK. So it was, for me, a very valuable chat. Because now I have two more ideas, and one I'm thinking hard about tag resources filter with CodePipeline V2. So I have something to do right now.
Awesome. So you have homework. That's great.
Yes.
We keep
you
in touch.
Your free time is also great. Where people can find you? On LinkedIn, I think. You're only on LinkedIn, right?
Yes. But I'm not... Yeah, I don't post, or I wouldn't say I am active on social networks.
Well, maybe people can drop you a message if they have notes.
On LinkedIn. Yeah, on LinkedIn.
Gabriel Pop, right?
Yes. I will try my best to answer on LinkedIn.
Thank you a lot, and see you next time.
Dankeschön, Herr Adam.
Perfect.
Have a great day.